The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it is Friday, so I'm turning it over to the esteemed Duff McKagan for the highly anticipated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Shit, man. Stop swearing. But I went to the doctor, and I said, Doc, I broke my leg in 12 places. Doctor said, you should stop going to those 12 places. Thank you very much, bye.
Thanks, Duff, for delivering every single week, or at least trying to. It's been over 4 years that he's been doing this, so we thank Duff, and we love the effort. We look forward to seeing Guns N' Roses on the road later this summer. Stadiums and arenas starting July 31st in Pennsylvania. Full-capacity crowds as well. Wolfgang Van Halen is opening the show, which is great, so go get that ticket. It's going to be a hot one. And, of course, don't forget about Fozzy. We're excited to hit the road as well. The Save the World Tour begins in earnest September 2nd. We're doing a few festival shows before then. You can get tickets at FozzyRock.com. Come out and rock with Fozzy. We start July 14th in Iowa City at Wildwood. July 15th at Kadot, Wisconsin, Rockfest with Anthrax, Steel Panther, and Rob Zombie. July 17th in Jacksonville, the Taco Festival, we're headlining that one at Daly's Place, which is where we do AEW Dynamite every single week, so that's pretty cool. August 7th, Sheboygan at Brat Days, also with Anthrax and Rob Zombie. And then the Save the World Tour starts with Through Fire, and who else is with us on that? Royal Bliss, and we start September 2nd in Columbus, Ohio, 3rd in Joliet, Illinois, September 4th, Belvedere, the Apollo Theater, September 6th in Kansasville, Wisconsin. September 9th, Hamburg, Pennsylvania. And September 10th at the Blue Ridge Rock Fest in Potomac, Virginia. I think Anthrax is on that one as well. Tons of dates more. We end up October 9th in Orlando at the Earth Day Birthday. So go to FozzyRock.com to check out all ticket information. Don't forget the Fozzy VIP experience. It's back as well. The best VIP in the business. We do a live performance before the show, doing songs you're not going to hear later that night. 11 VIPs are already sold out, so go to FozzyRock.com quickly and buy yours now. Fozzy is back. Come rock with us. Come hang with us, and don't forget to check out the new video for Sane. Just crossed 1 million views in less than 3 weeks as I'm talking to you right now. Impacted huge at rock radio. It is the most added single at rock radio in Fozzy Rock history. So right out of the gate, too. That's awesome. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for checking out the Winnipeggers, racking up tons of views as well. The views are up, which is great, on YouTube and Facebook. We drop new episodes every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. This week, Mistaken Identities. So you got to check that out. Dave Spivak, Rybo, and I share some of the times we've been mistaken for other random people and celebrities. A lady thought my name was Dave for about 6 months when I worked at Zellers, which is a Canadian Target, in about 1985 or so. Lots of hilarity happened because of that. Come check out Mistaken Identities and share a few laughs with the Winnipeggers Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook page and YouTube page. All right, today, this is big for me, one of my all-time favorite bands, and I've been a huge fan for 35 years, and we're celebrating the release of the brand new studio album from Helloween. The new album is just simply titled Helloween, and I've got both of the band's lead singers, Michael Kiske and Andy Daris, on Talk Is Jericho today. Super excited about this. Kiske was the band's original singer in the 80s, and when he parted ways with Helloween in 1993, the band brought in Andy Daris very quickly, and they went on to success as well. Now they have returned. They're both in Helloween, along with the third vocalist, Kai Hansen, who is also returning on guitar. You hear all that happened back in 2016, the Pumpkins United reunion. Kiske is also talking about the reasons why he originally left Helloween, the rumor that he was going to be the new singer of Iron Maiden after Bruce Dickinson's departure in 1992. We talk about that. What brought them back to Helloween in 2016? He and Andy explain how Kiske came back into the band, how they tackle the vocal parts along with Kai. The blending is just insane. Their favorite songs to sing live, how they test themselves before the big Pumpkins United World Tour to ensure they can get along. Lots of red wine was involved, I'll tell you that. And we'll, of course, hear about the new self-titled album, which is, people are saying, is already the album of the year. It's just unbelievable. It came out today. Go check that out on Spotify and wherever you buy and stream music. It's also available at Helloween.org. All right, one of my favorite all-time bands. Super excited about Helloween's Michael Kiske and Andy Daris here on Talk Is Jericho, starting now. The good news is that we're here with Andy and Michael from Helloween, and it's great to talk to you guys. So much exciting stuff going on. I love the fact that you have three singers in your band, and you guys, because we met in Hungary pre-lockdown, which seems like 1,000 years ago, but you guys have become really good friends, it seems, over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it started slowly, of course, you know, lots of insecurities in the beginning, as usual. But it's like, I personally think after the first tour in 2017, we knew that this is going to work, and all the fear and insecurities were gone, you know.
How did you feel, Andy?
Still don't know why what mood. I just actually switched on the camera and suddenly it's unmuting me. Okay.
I was watching you smoke your cigar and thinking, wow, he's very quiet today. He's not saying anything.
No,
he always says that.
Smoking a cigar doesn't make a lot of noise, does it? Back to the question. I mean, actually, we both had a bit of a stomach ache, I think, because we knew each other theoretically for decades because we'd been more or less having the same karma to live through.
And the same job.
Yeah. And suddenly you get to know each other and you realize, okay, damn, I mean, this you missed out decades of that guy. So actually, it's just great to hang out with each other. And this is something you miss a lot during tour. Sure, the boys are there, but everybody else in Helloween has having his own things and hobbies and goes here, goes there, blah, blah, blah. So occasionally, you find yourself then with Sasha, who has his things, or with Wyke. When you're really crazy, you go out with Wyke. And it happens from time to time. But then Michael and I, we are having so much in common, so it's never boring, and it's whenever you're in the mood of like, let's have a cheesecake or a coffee together, then
we shouldn't.
We shouldn't, but the other is in anyway. So yeah, let's do that. Okay, yeah. So,
yeah, it was a very interesting lesson, life lesson. It's like we have had that experience that there has been a relationship created out of the circumstances, but we didn't know each other, but there was a certain relationship. Just because of both of us being singers in the band. And I always say when I saw his face, like after I got out of the band, it was not necessarily the best feelings that was going in that direction, you know, when he took my job. Okay. And the other way around, he was getting fire from my fans, you know, complaining that I'm not there. And so my face wasn't such a positive thing to him either. So that was an interesting thing when we finally met each other, that we actually got really good along. And it was very interesting to see that, because life is funny sometimes, you know.
It's definitely something special, because you would definitely think that people who are actually looking at each other like competitioners or whatever through decades, when they finally would meet, you think, okay, there would probably in the perfect world be something like a diplomacy thing going on. But that you really warm up so fastly, and we're both not gay, so that's even the second miracle. But we have cheesecake and red wine in common, so.
I think it all had to happen.
It was funny when I saw you in Hungary, your warm-up for the show was having a glass of red wine together. There was no like scales being sung or anything. It was just a glass of red wine, have a little conversation, and just go on stage.
But that's how it came to with me. I was like, when I started to be like in Unisonic, when I started to tour again and play live and stuff, I was like insane. I was doing like, I had a little mixing desk with me with headphones and an Electro Voice Elvis microphone. And I was singing like for 1.5 hours sometimes Elvis tunes because I thought I needed it. I was, yeah. I was almost worn out when I got on stage, and I don't need any of that. I've noticed it was bullshit. You just need to talk a little and sing a little and it works. But I was completely the opposite to what you described when I started again.
What did you guys think, like you mentioned, Michael, when you left Helloween and Andy came in, and Andy, when you were in the band, what did you think of each other as singers? You didn't know each other, but as singers, what was the thought?
Well, me personally, I had a lot of work with that bloke. Because certainly you try to sing the tunes as good as you can. But nevertheless, I never tried to copy Michael because, first of all, he's one of the best singers in his genre in the world, if not the best. So who am I to actually try to copy a singer like him? And then comes my ego and tells me, look, but I mean, you're more or less successful with your own shit you're doing. So why would you copy? This is a talk we had in the very beginning during the Master of the Rings recording with Wyke and Marcus. And mainly we all agreed it should not be a copy, so go your own way. But on stage, it was a constant fight because Mr. Kiske here is, even if you try to sing it as good as you can, you'll never sound as good as he does on his.
You're very nice. What I say to the fans when I give interviews now, because now I can be completely objective when looking at the history. I mean, in the early years, I was hurt, I was frustrated, you know, I was angry, and I wasn't even listening to any of the records. You know, I was refusing to listen to any. Now I can listen to the whole stuff, and I always say that I think that he saved the band because in the last 3 years, the band was not functioning anymore. When Kai left, the whole balance was gone and it was not working anymore. And he was exactly what the band needed to continue. You know, I can say that now and I can see that now. For me, the off time was very important personally and stuff like that. I don't want to miss it. But I especially say that to Kiske fans, you know, that they got to be aware that that was exactly what the band needed because the band was not functioning anymore. And with him, the band was, okay?
That's what you think.
Yes. Well, I don't know what happened, but that's what it looks like. That's what you think.
It's interesting, though, because being a lifelong Helloween fan from the Judas EP, I agree with what you say, Michael, that Andy did kind of save the band in a lot of ways. And it's one of the great replacement singers or new singers in rock history, much like Brian Johnson, Bruce Dickinson, and Andy Darris. I'd put you right in there. Sammy Hagar, you came in and gave the band a whole jolt of electricity that brought the band to a different level.
Yeah, like I said, we were not functioning anymore. It was just no fun anymore. It was necessary for the change was necessary. It was great for me, even though it was painful. It was great for my personal evolution, you know, to be on my own for so many years and having to do everything on my own. But I'm pretty happy that I don't have to do that anymore now.
When you left Helloween, there was a big rumor that you were one of the thoughts of being the new lead singer of Iron Maiden when Bruce Dickinson left, because it was about the same time you left Helloween, Bruce left Iron Maiden. Obviously, there's similar vocal styles. Is there anything to that rumor at all?
Yeah, I turned it down. I thought Iron Maiden is not good enough for me. No, it was funny. That question comes up since then. Like almost every time when I'm doing interviews for anything, that question comes up. And the funny thing is, I was actually hearing that information that I'm the new singer of Iron Maiden on TV in those days. I was watching a metal show. It was a cute girl was hosting a heavy metal show over here. And she was saying, well, everybody knows now, Michael Kiske is the new singer of Iron Maiden. And, oh, that's interesting. They haven't called me yet. I don't know where that came from. Maybe it came from the fact that I didn't have a band in those years, that I was just free, sort of. And then people were speculating. The only thing that I always tell people who ask that question is that I was doing an interview with a French guy in the mid 90s or later 90s. And he said that he had an interview with Steve Harris a couple of weeks before. And that Steve Harris said something like that I was among the three that he could imagine or something like that, which I don't know if that's true. You got to ask him. I haven't seen Steve Harris for ages. I saw him the last time at the wedding of Rod Smallwood, which is ages ago. I still had hair when that was.
Well, because then you also worked with Adrian Smith on your first solo record, so there was that connection too.
Yeah, that was because he didn't have anything to do. I didn't have anything to do, and Rod Smallwood was made. It was great. I was actually in my apartment with Adrian Smith listening to that new Iron Maiden record without Bruce.
Oh, X Factor.
And we both didn't know what to think. It was weird. It was really weird. I mean, I grew up with Iron Maiden. You know, I was 14 when Number of the Beast was the main record, and Screaming for Vengeance from Judas Priest was their main record. So I started with all this at a very good time. You know, it was pretty amazing. And to me, Iron Maiden without Bruce Dickinson doesn't make any sense. And nothing against the guy. I don't know the guy. But it's a very unthankful job, you know, to try to fit into those shoes of Bruce Dickinson, which is I would never do that. You can survive it, but he wasn't the quality of singer to replace Dickinson. You know, he couldn't sing all those tunes. And I had nothing against the guy. I don't know the guy. Maybe he's just sweetest person or whatever. I don't know. I'm just talking as an Iron Maiden fan. Okay. But it's like, it was so weird to me to listen to that album. It almost sounded like he was out of tune on the album even.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Like flat. Like not being able to hit the tones and stuff.
You're right. You're totally. And he is a great guy, but it was a strange choice because it was a different vocal range completely.
I understand that he said yes. You know, it could have worked. Maybe in who would in a situation that he was in, probably, you know, not having a big band or anything like that, who would turn it down? You know, Brian Johnson could have said no. You know, but he didn't. Yeah.
Right, or Sammy could have said no, but he didn't.
Exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you came into to Helloween, Andy, and having to kind of replace Mike, was it hard to do with fans? Did they appreciate you and accept you instantly, or did you have to do some work?
Well, honestly, I should have, or I thought about having to do some work, because I realized that there were quite a few old fans who definitely preferred Michael, and everybody knows why. I mean, he's the original singer on the hits like I Want Out, Future World, Eagle Fly Free, you name them. But it's impossible to replace a singer like Michael. So the only thing I thought is concentrate on your own shit, because you cannot win that war. I mean, that's,
you shouldn't fight it.
If you start to join that war, no chance to win it, because as I said, he's too good in his genre. Why? How could I ever reach him? So I decided together with Michael and Wyke that we're going to do my shit the way I sing and just hope for the best. If you're accepted, yeah, hooray. If not,
it's always like that. When you replace someone in a successful band, you always get that. It doesn't matter. Even if you're 10 times better than the previous singer or guitar player or whatever, you will always get that because you have an audience that likes the members of the band the way they were. But like you said earlier, you were not trying to copy like the Keeper records or anything. And I think that's why
Master of the Ring.
It's just one ring. That's why that record worked. Because what I the way I describe it, I described it to you, Andy, as well, when we talked about it, it doesn't sound like the Keeper Records. It doesn't try to copy the previous sound, but it sounds like Halloween. That's the funny thing. It's like some kind of a new Halloween sound that was created. And that's why we're talking today. It's a little bit like on a different level, of course, with Van Halen. When David Lee Roth left Van Halen, they sounded different too. I mean, Sammy Hagar is a completely different beast, you know? He's an amazing vocalist, great guy, but he sounded completely different. But it worked out because they just let it happen and they didn't try to sound like the previous Van Halen. That's the same thing Halloween did, and that's why they succeeded. That's the way you got to do it. You got to stand for the changes.
True.
If that's even a saying.
It is now.
Stand for the changes.
If you take Sammy Hagar, for example, I mean, there you have an example of a singer who is way more capable of singing than in comparison with Diamond Dave. Diamond Dave is the character, yes. But when it comes to singing, it's definitely Hagar.
There's more range, but I like Dave. I like Dave Lee Roth.
I love Sammy Hagar. I grew up with David Lee Roth. I was one of those guys who was bloking and meh, meh, when Sammy Hagar joined, and I couldn't stand it for 2 years, and then I had to learn that he is doing a fabulous job, and then I was into Van Halen again.
It's also difficult not to like him.
Yes.
It's super difficult. Yes. Yeah, he's a sunny boy. I love him too. But then again, from that point of view, I completely understand that fans are super pissed off when a singer goes and another comes in. I was quite aware of it, so call me blue-eyed or call me too positive.
I think your Pink Cream 69 situation helped.
Yeah, well, but nevertheless, Michael knows the story. My story was my old band, which was successful in the beginning, like to start like a rocket. We'd been number one in Japan and everything looked great. I have written, to that point, I've written all the songs for the band, and suddenly this band tells me, oh, we don't want to play your songs anymore. Now we want to sound like Metallica. I said, well, I love Metallica, but we have our own style. We have a number one record going on. Why the freaking hell would you like to sound like a band which is already like a style? Why would you like to copy somebody who's already there and successful? I mean, I did not understand this.
Excellent.
And for a songwriter or for a musician, the worst thing you can do to him is tell him, I don't like your songs. Because that's your daily bread. I mean, if somebody is going like, I love your songs, I mean, that's more important than money at the end of the day, you know, because that's what keeps you going. And suddenly your own band is telling you, oh, we don't want to play your shit. We want to sound like Metallica in the future. And that's exactly when Wyke gave me a call, 29th of December. And I said, look, Wyke, because he told me if you don't join, he would split the band. He would split up the band.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's how far it went. And Marcus gave me a call and said, well, then at least let's have a talk. And I said, okay, you know what? I'm not going to decide this year, the 29th of December, okay? I'm driving up to Hamburg. Let's have a talk. So the only talk I needed is I made them listen to the songs and I saw the gleam in their eyes. I was like, wow, they were completely in love with my songs. And then for an egoistic part of you and an egocentric part of surviving as a musician, I had to ask myself, so who's my band now?
Mm.
My old band who doesn't want to play my songs, or now Michael and Marcus, who was like, we love the song.
Mm. I would have done the same probably.
So that decision made on the first of January, I said, okay, I'm in.
And you wrote a whole bunch of key songs on following records and stuff.
Yes.
In my opinion, a lot of the key songs.
And for me as a musician, that was my band then, because honestly, the band who loves your song is your band, period.
Right.
So that's the way I saw it. That's why I'm saying it's just out of my ego. That's what I needed. I did not look left and right who was hurt or who was trampled or kicked upon or whatever. I just followed my own instincts without asking myself, is somebody else hurt here? So actually the right thing to do was like contacting Michael and say, hey, the situation was like this. I did not actually kick you out of the band because that's something we had to clear out when we met. And Michael told him the story because it's a different point of view. If I would have known that Michael would think that I stole his job, then probably maybe I would have even contacted him, because I knew exactly the same story that would nearly happen to me and Dougie from when Dougie sang for Rainbow. And I knew Dougie was in Japan and they playing a successful tour. And during that time, Richie Blackmore gave me a call if I would join Rainbow.
Really?
And I said, does Dougie know about that? And the management found out then, because I was not given the information I wanted. And the management, back in the days, we were with Sanctuary Music and the Iron Maiden management. And yep. They told me that Dougie would not know anything about it. So behind his back, he's already looking for another singer. I mean, if it goes down like this, this is something that you really have to set right. Until I told Dougie, then I'm not going to do it, because you just don't do that.
And as for me, I actually wanted out. It was subconsciously, I wanted out. In my head, I didn't, but I was laying bombs everywhere. You know, it was pretty obvious. I mean, now I know I wanted out. I needed to get out of it.
Well, let's talk about, and for those who are wondering, Andy's previous band was called Pink Cream 69. But let's talk about how Helloween, the kind of pumpkins united, seven guys in the band. How did this transpire? Because it was hugely successful, and we'll talk about that. But for you, Michael, because you were working with Kai a little bit, but how was this presented and how did it kind of come together to do the big reunion?
Oh, that was a long process. I mean, I can cut it short. I ran into I was like, for years, this was impossible for me. I wouldn't even think about it.
You didn't even want to sing heavy metal for a long time.
Exactly. I was disappointed to the core, and I just didn't want to think about it. And it was like, it started to get to enjoy this type of music a little again, started with Avantasia, and then later on, with Place Vendôme, you know, and then we formed Unisonic. It was step by step. But as for Helloween and the Pumpkins United, I ran into Michael Wycath in 2013. I was on tour with Avantasia, and Helloween played on that same festival. And I ran into him backstage, and he said the perfect line that was just completely unarms you. He said, "What have I done that you can't forgive me?" And I was holding my breath, and I was like, I was feeling deep down inside of myself, and I said, and I realized there was no anger. The anger was gone. I was just holding on to it in my head, but it wasn't there anymore. So I said to him, "You know what? I think I've forgiven you a long time ago." And that was for me an inner game changer somehow. Still no talk about reunions or anything like that. Another 2 years passing by, playing shows in Spain with Unisonic, great shows, little places, like maybe up to 2,000 people, but great shows. Unisonic was just getting in shape somehow. And after one of those shows, Kai Hansen said to me, "Michael, one day we just got to do something again with Helloween before it's too late, you know?" And I said, "You know what, Kai, I'm open." And that was the start of it, because Costa was playing drums for Unisonic. Costa's part of the management, bottom row. So he mentioned it in the office, and then Jan called me up and wanted to check out how I really feel about it and stuff. And then Jan wanted me to have a long talk with Waiki, which we did, and it worked well. We sorted everything out and noticed that everybody has a different version in his head what went down. And then Jan said, you got to fly to Tenerife. Do you say Tenerife in English?
Tenerife, yeah.
Tenerife. And spend some time with Andy, because if you guys don't get along, it's not going to work. So I flew over, and we spent like something like 2 weeks, almost every day together. He was bringing me to the places where he thought the food is great, and we talked for hours. And I'm not saying this. I always send that ahead of what I'm saying now, because it sounds like you just want to promote this Pumpkins United thing. But it felt like I knew him. Have you had that experience? You meet someone for the first time, but you feel like you know him. You know, this kind of karma connection.
Yeah.
And that's what I had with him. He was the one who mentioned it. but we both felt it. It was almost like I knew him from a previous life, which I'm sure we do. That was an interesting experience because it was going down perfectly. Well, we talked about everything, spiritual things, musical things. And after that going down, we did the first real plans, you know, getting everyone rehearsing and things like, I can't remember how it exactly went down, but it was getting it together with me and Wyke first, or getting that out of the way, which kind of happened naturally over the years, and then checking out how we do.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So how was it kind of presented to you, Andy? Because the plan was always to have two singers, but here you are as the main singer of the band for 25 years and one of the main songwriters. That must have been kind of interesting from your perspective.
He was the one who was actually behind it in a very strong way. I was reading interviews from him like 3 years earlier where he was talking about something like that. And I was going like, what is he talking about? This is never going to happen. Him and Kai are the ones who wanted to do this mostly, in my opinion.
You should know that I'm a Leo. Leos always look for the most lazy way to get through life. So I prepare it very, very carefully for years until I finally had them to the point that they said, okay, we're going to kind of contact Michael and Kai, because I planned that in the future I only have half of the shit to sing.
Oh, that's the funny thing about it. I mean, I can guarantee you, I've seen him talking. I mean, I read him talking about it in an interview like three years before. And I was going mad. It was like a friend of mine was sending me some of his statements through an SMS. Do you know anything about this? Oh, this is bullshit. I don't know what he's talking about. That came from him.
Hypothetically, I'm always talking about it hypothetically. No, honestly. I think the key conversation was held in Japan in the Tokyo hotel, which unfortunately they turned it down for a new hotel. That was a classic old hotel where the Beatles are.
Beatles stayed.
I thought you talked about a band.
It was beautiful. Anyway, we're sitting down there in the cafeteria there and having a talk with the JVC manager. And we just had a talk about what could we do, do we have any ideas for the fans, something special, blah, blah, blah. And I just put it on the table and said, if you really want to present something special, we definitely should think about asking Michael Kiske if he would join, because that Kai would like to join was more or less clear, because we already had, in the very moment that was, it was the second Hellish rock tour with Gamma Ray. Mm-hmm. So that's where my idea was born. And I thought, okay, if everything is working super nicely with Kai, why wouldn't it actually work with Michael? Because so far I already heard the stories from Marcus and Wyke that Kai was actually the problem child, so to say.
He wanted to leave. He was like, he wanted to figure out.
Always partying and the rock and roll guy, and Kai, you have to take care, and blah, blah, blah. But it worked super nicely. So the whole tour was great. The people loved it when Kai joined the show for the last two Halloween songs, I Went Out in Future World. It was perfect. I mean, you saw that the people are having this, wow, something special thing in their eyes. And that's when I said, if you really want to have another extra special, it's logically Michael Kiske, bring him on stage. In a perfect world, bring the whole band together. And that's when it was born.
To me, that's pretty cool of you, Andy, because once again, you have, it would seem most people would be very protective of their spot, so to speak. But you were opening up, like you said, to bring one of the greatest singers back into the band.
But did I mention that I'm a Leo?
Lazy. Regardless, it was a great idea.
It's unusual. It's certainly
very unusual.
Yeah. But the whole thing is very unusual, and especially that it works that well. I mean, I think Van Halen tried it too with both singers, and it did not work out.
You told me that they tried it, and then they kicked in the knees.
Well, yeah, Anthrax tried that with Joey Belladonna and John Bush. It didn't work. They did for a short period of time. Iron Maiden obviously have the three guitar players when Adrian Smith came back, but just with Bruce. So this was one step more. You went from a five-piece to a seven-piece, almost like an orchestra of heavy metal, but it worked so perfectly and created such a huge buzz. People went crazy for it.
And it's a much bigger circus now.
Well, I think unifications is something that we need nowadays, because honestly, you see, if you're alone, it's like you feel like nothing in our business, definitely. And sooner or later, you have to realize if you stick together and everybody puts in his strength or his opinion or his little color or here and there, then you've got something that in our case is called Halloween. And now with the two guys, two new old guys or two old new guys, whatever. Weird, but you know what I mean? So there you have these extra spices that were lost on the way because simply the guys were not there anymore.
And I think it also sends out a nice message. It's like, mm-hmm. to me personally, in the beginning, the motivation was making peace. I wanted to get it out of my system. Even if the thing would have been over after the first tour in 2017, I would still be happy that to have done that, just to get it out of my system, making peace with Wyke, you know, forgiving and forgetting. It's just healing. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my first motivation, but now I love it. Now I love what came out of it, this whole band thing. And I'm happy to be part of this family again, to be honest. But that wasn't my first motivation. It just grew like over the last 4 years or how long that's going now.
Yeah, I think the first few weeks we were like straying dogs sniffing on each other's ass. Like, is he cool? Is he an asshole? Forgive me that picturesque comes up. But
my head whatever. Now.
Visual image there.
Like some stray, seven straying dogs smelling each other's asses. I don't like you.
But I honestly think it's a good message. It's a very good message, you know, that you can actually, there has been so much crap going on over years and bad words and stuff like that, you know, and actually forgiving and forgetting. And I hope people feel that this is not just a game we play. I hope that they can feel that that's real. I couldn't do it if that wouldn't be real. Mm-hmm. Right?
No, I think that would be impossible, Michael.
I would go
2.5-3 hours. Forget it. People would realize.
Especially when, as we know too, it's not just the time in the studio. Or you mentioned kind of the honeymoon period of you guys hanging out in Tenerife. When you get on that bus and get on those planes and go on the road, you find out very quickly if the chemistry is there as people and as friends. And if it's not there, it's done. And the fact that you have that chemistry, right?
That's why we did contracts only for the live tour, for the 2017 tour. We only made contracts for this tour. So if we hated each other in the end, everybody could go his own way again. And after it worked out so well, we started to think further, you know, and the idea of an album came out.
Oh, I think this is something we plainly told people in each and every interview when they asked us, so if there's a new album after the tour, we always said, let's first look how the tour went down, because it's one thing to meet 3 hours on stage for every second day, but it's another thing to meet each other 10 or 12 hours every day in the studio. So, you
know. In the planes together, on the gates, waiting together. It's like
that's right.
Together
that's right.
All the time. It's difficult when you can't stand each other, you know?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So So when you guys started rehearsing and putting together the set list, one of my favorite things, and it's all over the new record, which I can't wait to talk about, but when you're talking about catalog and the first tour, how did you kind of decide who would sing what and what songs would you do? And it was so interesting, the blending that you guys did.
Well, we have many songs. That makes it a little difficult. But I don't know. I kind of stuck out of it most of the time. Because
well, most of the time, I think the only things we had to decide is when I didn't want to sing a certain sentence or part, or Michael didn't want to sing a certain sentence or part. That was the first 20-30%, which were clear. We try to actually feel good on whatever we sing. I mean, there's definitely certain stuff that you like for whatever reason, or you dislike for whatever reason.
You talk about the album, the new album?
Yeah.
I think you talked about the life situation, right?
I was talking when you first got together for figuring out the set list.
That was quite easy. It's just too many songs that you can actually... We could easily make 3 sets of 3 hours with new songs. That's how many songs are there, really, which is great. You know, you there's a lot to choose from. But I didn't think it was so difficult, because certain songs you just have to play. Certain songs you just can't leave out.
But what I'm talking about, though, is how you decided who would sing what. The vocal interplay was so incredible.
Yeah, but that was easy. You mean live, right? You mean for the
live, yeah.
That was easy, because he wanted to get rid of the typical Kiska tunes.
Did I mention that I'm illegal?
You know, and so we that was easily split it. And we just did a few things where we thought we should do duets, because it's a great thing to do. That was also easy, wasn't it? I didn't think it was very difficult.
No, it was a checking out, listening to it in the rehearsal room. If it was good, it was good. Sometimes you say, okay, maybe we can switch the verses. Verse A, Michael. Verse B, Andy. Let's try to do the refrain together. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes we decided that the refrain is also in parts. And
sometimes we do harmonies together.
Whatever we felt.
Yeah. There was an idea that I should sing Why, which is a typical Andy song. Jan thought it was a cool idea. And that's how we rehearsed it. But then we noticed there's always twice the same verse part. So it's like ideal for a duet. So we switched that and we started to sing it together, and it turned out way better. That happened too.
Yeah, I think that was the initial thing that shoo us away. Oh, look, I mean, Michael should actually sing Why, but when they sing it together, it's much more fun. Mm-hmm. And that was the initial thing, Why. And then we tried
everything out.
Yeah.
So there were just suggestions from the management sometimes, or like and on this record production from Dennis Ward. It was just suggestions, and we just tried it out or whatever. It was very, very interesting how that happened in the rehearsal room, because he was naturally, when I was singing Why, he was naturally taking over the second part of the verse. It was just, he just did it naturally, and it just sounded much better than, you know, just me doing it.
What we realized, I think, was we got the confidence when we realized that when the boys in the rehearsal room were telling us, hey, that sounds freaking great. That's when we got the confidence, because the boys were like heads up suddenly and go like, do it that way, do it that way. That's fantastic. Just make the A, B, sing the song in the refrain, you're together. And because how would we know that we blend? We never sang together. And suddenly you realize when we sing together, we blend. That's a perfect, perfect thing. If you realize you've got two singers who blend.
The Sun was blending too. So I was,
I saw it.
We are the Simon Garfunkels of the metal.
It's such a, you can't imagine how cool it is with two singers in terms of the energy life. You know, you don't have to sing a freaking whole set. It is less than 50%. Because Kai does his bits too.
Mm-hmm.
And if one person gets sick, which I was on the very first tour, I was like almost constantly sick. I caught something in South America and didn't get rid of it. You can balance it out to the other one. And in Japan in 2018, he caught something and he was really struggling. So we moved songs to my side. Danger is when you don't sing, you tend to drink too much red wine behind the stage. That's the only danger. I mean, honestly, I'm usually not a very drink person. I usually don't drink much, but I was like overdoing it And in America, actually, in Chicago, I fell off the stage. I was drinking red wine. I was not eating anything. So I was drinking like an idiot. And then the only thing I remember is I was standing in front of Donnie's drums. And then I woke up. A monitor guy picking me up from the audience again. Luckily they kind of bounced off my fall because it was a concrete ground. If I would have fallen on that, it could have been dangerous, but nothing happened. They just pulled me up and I continued singing, but I never had that before. I blacked out.
Yeah. Chicago. We are laughing now, and yeah. I'm laughing now, but I do remember that very moment when you just fell off. It was like, boom, you could have been dead. Everybody was like, I mean, really, nothing to laugh.
I can't even remember. I just get like a film cut.
Everybody was shocked and scared to death until you finally show a sign of life. It's like, okay, I'm okay. Everybody,
when I watched your set from the side stage, you guys had a table set up just out of view of the crowd with some red wine on it, some glasses. Vikey had his ashtray with his cigarette, which he's always smoking. You had your little party tray right there, the party table.
Kai always Jackie Coke.
That's the one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Kai. That's right, Kai, right. Yeah. It was really fun from a fan standpoint, too, because we'd heard Andy singing your songs for years, Michael, and then you got to sing some Andy songs. That was a pretty big moment, like Forever in One, and it was just kind of cool to see that.
Yeah. I see it like a late revenge. now this bastard has to sing my songs.
I like singing with them.
Yeah. Screw you, motherfucker.
Let's talk about the great new record, Helloween. It's coming out this week as we play this. Once again, the vocal blend, the album is so great, but the vocal blending start, as we're talking about singing, because now it's not just Andy and Michael, but Kai is interjected too. And he's got such a distinct voice that any line he sings, it just cuts right through. Once again, how did you guys decide which songs to do, which lines to do? Is every song on the album a duet per se? Kind of explain a little bit about that.
We had Dennis making a pre-draft. When Dennis knows his voice, Dennis knows my voice, and we just wanted someone outside of the band to make suggestions. So that's how we started. He was splitting the parts the way he thought it could work out, and that's how we tried it. I did the vocals with him in Tenerife, and if I didn't feel comfortable with a line, or I felt like this is typical Andy, I passed it over to him and he gave it a try. And sometimes there was a situation where he felt like I should give that a try. But most of the time, the songwriter had like in the head who should do it. For instance, like with Sasha Angels, he wanted me to sing it right away. He had the demo in, I think, 2019. It was done and he was sending me the demo and he wanted me to sing on it. So I laid vocals on. We added a middle part. We added with him in it, like in the sort of pre-production phase that came together. It was pretty easy, I thought. It was kind of difficult with Kai a little bit because in the very first planning of the Pumpkins United, it was only planned to have Kai do this sort of medley thing live, you know?
Right.
It was never really talked about him singing on the album, which we don't mind, but he kind of made that decision that he wants to be singing on the album too. And then as far as I've been told, the producers have sent him parts of other songs where they thought he should give it a try, and he just didn't. He just didn't sing on them, so it didn't happen. And then I did the vocals for Skyfall the way Dennis had written it down, okay? And it sounded great. Everybody was happy. I did the verses and all that, and I felt like, wow, this sounds like Keeper of the Seven Keys. That's so amazing. Everybody was happy. And then Kai said, well, I thought I'd sing that song.
The whole thing?
It was it would have sounded like Gummeray then, okay? So it's like, it was a very difficult situation because we wanted him to sing on the album, but that song, it would just been a wrong choice to have him doing the vocals because it's just such a Keeper song. So we were in a situation that the whole band feels like, no, Michael should sing at least what he does now, and you sing that those bits there, like we do it actually on the album now. That's how everybody felt like it should be done. He agrees with it now. He's happy with it now. But there was a phase with long talks. We can't do it unless he likes it, because we don't do anything the songwriter doesn't want. But it was kind of difficult to show him that he has to look at the big picture. He has to look at the band and the whole album and what's the right thing to do now. Because even though he doesn't like it, we like his singing and he has his fans. But when it comes to the success of the band, Andy's and my voice, you know, it just weighs a little more than when he sings. So you got to be careful with how you balance it. But it wasn't even the main reason. The main reason was that it sounded great the way we did it. It just sounded right. And then he did the vocals for the verses, and it just didn't. It wasn't any better. You know what I mean?
Right.
That took a while.
The touch was gone, put it that way. I made a little sacrifice and told everybody I'd rather not sing on Skyfall if Michael Kiske is the main voice and Kai and myself are only the guest vocalist somewhere in the middle parts. Because otherwise you would have this big Hello, We're Back Again song, and Skyfall is the perfect song with Michael's voice on it to say, hey, Halloween is back, and look, it sounds like The Keepers. Wow. And suddenly, suddenly this surprise would have been completely blown in the air for nothing.
Yeah.
If there were too much Kai or too much Andy, if there would be too much Kai or too much Andy.
And it had nothing to do with ego. It was not an ego thing. I don't care. It's like, it was just the song was working so well.
But see, that's the beautiful thing about this. And as we know, as musicians, it doesn't matter who writes it, who sings it, who plays on it. All that matters is the song. But for the first kind of return of Halloween, the lack of ego, what you just said, Andy, is amazing. Because even, it's funny, M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold is my Halloween buddy. We're huge Halloween fans. And he was laughing about how, well, let's choose the 12-minute last song on the album to make a single for, and then we'll edit it to 7 minutes, right? But in the edit for the video, we don't hear you, Andy, until basically we run through the maze, Hangar 18, which is about 3 minutes in. Yeah. And it's like that, the lack of ego is just blowing my mind here, because that doesn't usually happen in rock and roll, as we all know.
Yeah, that's very true. But that's why we added him in the movie more. He's the Iron Man.
Yes.
At least visually, he's there, you know?
Yeah.
I'm the Iron Man, yeah.
No, but that lack of ego is very mature. That's very cool that you did that.
There was one situation that stuck in my head, which was the last time that I was kind of wondering about this whole crazy situation. It was when we did the vocals early last year, before the pandemic. We had a daily routine. It was usually like me showing up at, I don't know, 12 or something like that. And then we were in this garden drinking a bit of coffee and talking. And then sometime Charlie would come up and say, I'm done. He was doing some editing down there, usually every day. And I needed the lyrics. So he went up. Andy went up into his office and printed the lyrics out. And he came down the stairs with a big smile and handed the lyrics over to me. And I just thought, that situation here, you know, you handing me lyrics over for a Halloween record that I'm laying vocals on now, it's just insane. I couldn't. And you just like, if you would have written all that down like a movie script, they would have said, nah, that's unreal. No one's going to believe that, you know, write a new one. You know, it's like, that was the last time where I was kind of thinking, this is so crazy. I would have never have thought like the years before that something like that ever happened, you know?
Yeah. Hey, maybe back in our 20s, we would not have done it.
It's interesting too. Is it weird to do an edit like that where it's 12 minutes down to 7? Because we all know what happened with the famous Halloween edit from Keeper of the Seven Keys 1, which is just completely butchered. Were you a little bit scared at first when you heard edit, Michael?
Yeah, I was. But it turned out much better, because this time Kai was like the one who said how to do it. You know, it's like in the 80s when we did that, it was the record company who was cutting it down like that.
And did you have any say in it at all? Any decision at all? Here's the song.
Not in the cut. It just happened, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of the music, we always did what we wanted, but that edit was not, we didn't have any say in that. And this time Kai was the one who was guiding the whole thing. So it works. It works. It's still not. It's just a portion of the song, but it works a lot better.
Andy, when you were writing the songs for this album, because you wrote quite a few songs, was it fun for you to kind of come up with melodies that you knew that Michael would be able to knock out of the park?
Well, I hoped he can't sing them. But the bastard sits down and sings them. Honestly, it was a great relief because when listen to Fear of the Fallen, for example, Fear of the Fallen for one singer is impossible because the voices are constantly blending over themselves. So there would be probably no singer in the world who could sing that because he would have to hold his breath for 4 minutes or something like that.
You know? Right.
So for me, it was quite super, super easy to write suddenly in with that thing in the back of my mind. We are two singers, maybe even three singers. So you can do whatever you like. That was the first thing that popped up in my mind when I wrote The Fear of the Fallen. And because of that, I went on with Rise Without Chain and Cyanide. Unfortunately, Michael didn't sing on Cyanide, but I could imagine that also would have been a great song for a duet.
I refused to, because to me that was such a clear Andy Darris song.
Yeah, which I heard you, and I sang it, but actually you were in the back of my mind for that song too. I thought actually that would be a song where I sing the brutal verses and you sing that nice refrain. And probably the refrain would fly much more when you would sing it. But then again, it's okay. It sounds okay. It sounds good.
I think it was perfect the way it is. It was one of those songs where I, in the same way, when I did Out for the Glory, it just worked. I didn't even know the song because I couldn't understand what Wyke wanted with those songs because on the demos, he was laying vocals on it. And when Wyke's singing, it sounds like you burn a witch.
or kill a pig.
There's no melody. There's just someone gets slaughtered. That's what it sounds like. And I did not know what he was trying to do with those songs. So it was a situation when we did the first brainstorming where we met up in Hamburg. I think it was in 2018 in April. We met in Hamburg and everybody played the ideas and he played Down in the Dumps. And he played the songs that he had, the three songs, and I just didn't understand anything. I didn't know what he was trying with them. And the band, don't worry, the band said, we know his demos. We know what it sounds like. Don't worry, it's going to be great. So I trusted them. And it was true. And I didn't practice those songs. And when I did the Out for the Glory, it just happened in one evening. You know, I got through the parts, I learned them, and I did it, and it just worked out. And when it is so obvious, it's easy. Well, you know, he came in and was happy right away, you know? And to me, it was with Cyanide and some of the other songs, it was clear to me that's Andy. It just sounds right when he sings it. So I didn't even want to have any try on that, you know?
Yeah, you didn't want to sing on my songs, you bastard. That's all.
No, it's just when it's so working with you, why should I, you know?
Just to make me happy.
And give him less work to do. He's a Leo, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the album works. The album works so well, and it's. I think it's exactly what people are going to be waiting for and hoping for. One of the interesting things for me, Michael, that you can answer is I'm one of the guys that looks at who writes the songs. And Sasha wrote great songs, and Andy and Kai and even Marcus had a song. But no Michael Kiske songs. And you've had some great ones in the past from the first Halloween records that you were on. Any reason why there was none of your compositions on it?
Yeah, I just stepped out of it. I didn't even really try. Because I felt like my stuff was good in the Keeper years, but I don't think that I wrote key songs. I think the key songs for the band who made the career of the band came from Kai, Wyke, and later from Andy. So I felt like we do have enough songwriters. I mean, I was meeting up with Sasha in Berlin once, but it was more actually getting to check out how we worked together. We didn't really care much about the song. It fell under the table. We didn't even talk about it anymore. But no, I didn't even try. I'm writing an acoustic album right now, actually, just for myself and to use the time. But we have so many songwriters. Especially when it comes to this type of music, the stuff that I'm doing is usually very different. And it's a question of even in the 80s, my stuff was very different. And it was always a question if the band could transform it into a Halloween song, which they did. You know, it's like my original versions usually sounded quite different. It would still be the same situation. I just write a song. I don't write a metal song. I just have an acoustic guitar and I write a song. And then it's a question of that could be pumped up like right. to a metal song or something like that. I'm sure something's going to happen if we continue like that, if the world doesn't end next year or anything like that, and we make another album. I'm sure there's going to be maybe another song of mine, but I thought we have enough great songwriters, and it's more important that Kai writes. I wish he would have written like two more or something.
Yeah.
In my opinion, but he's a lazy bastard. He came extremely late. He's really lazy, but maybe next time.
A lot of Leos in this band, Andy.
Yeah, it's only Michael and myself, I think. Michael Weckert and myself. We are Leos.
I'm an aquarium.
You're an aquarium.
I'm a scorpion. Was the idea to make this a straight-on heavy metal record? Because usually Andy has you write some great kind of ballad-type songs. But there was none of that on this record, which is, you know, I understand the metal side. Did you not even try to do anything slower for this?
We had one.
We had a ballad.
He has a great ballad. I think he has written like maybe the best ballad he has ever written. But unfortunately, they changed it. They changed the key to a lower key. And in the end, he was not happy with how it sounded anymore. It's going to be on the next one. But that one, I was very sad that it didn't end up on the
album. Yeah, we all were. But then again, when you listen, because Michael sang the original refrain from when it not was not, I think we transposed it 5 semitones even. When it was not transposed, it's very high pitched. For me, it's the limit. So I can sing it, but it's my absolute limit. And Michael demoed it and it sounded fantastic, but during the production Dennis the bastard he came up with the idea that we should transpose it down to a range where the people could sing along with it. I mean, that was the main idea, and I thought it's a good idea, so I said, yeah, let's give it a try. Okay, and it turned out to become a very, very beautiful song, but it's not what we actually heard from the demo, where everybody's goosebumps were going off. And suddenly you sit there and you listen to a great song, which is not Halloween anymore, because you realize, okay, the high pitch is a very important part here.
Gotcha.
It would be like a tale that wasn't right, or forever and one pitch down 5 semitones. It would lose everything. And we didn't realize until we recorded everything, and you sit here and think, and you think, it sounds super nice, but it's not Halloween anymore. It's gone. And that's when we decided to actually postpone it and rather re-record it in the original tune. And I definitely think Michael should sing the refrain. The refrain flies so beautifully. Or the two of us, I mean, I can do a voice under him as on the demo. Suddenly something.
I also like the lower version. I also like the version that we did. I thought it was still great. Also, the way you sung it, I thought it was, I personally liked it. I don't think there's anything we can't do.
I'd rather have it re-recorded next time and you sing the refrain, I think, because it sounded so good.
Cool. I love the song. I love to sing on it.
But the idea, I mean, to actually not give Dennis all the blame, bullshit. I mean, we all were fond of the idea to tune it down to a, for everybody, singable version. That it takes away all the Halloweenishness.
Halloweenishness.
The whole Halloween.
What's the song called?
Into the Sun.
Into the Sun. As we start to kind of wind down here, one of the cool things that you guys have really incorporated, and were very specific and believing in, was including your old drummer Ingo into the whole family. He does the drum solo with Danny live, a great video of him. And then the rumor is that the drums were recorded on Ingo's drum set. I mean, that's a true Halloween fans, you know, trivia. But how did that come about? And Michael, give us a little bit of a description of what kind of a guy Ingo was, because he is kind of the one guy from the original Halloween family that we don't know a lot about because he passed away so young.
Yeah. Let me just start with how I think it came together. It was like using the drums of him. And then I come to Ingo. I was running into a fan I think in 2017 in Hamburg, I was in a shopping mall and I was talking to that guy for about 2 hours in front of a Saturn market. And he started the conversation that he has the drums of Ingo and he wants the whole band to sign inside of the snare drum. Okay. And I'm not sure if that's how it went down because I forgot about it. And then later on, I heard that Donnie bought the drums from him. I think it was the guy. It's the only one I can remember who had a drum of Ingo. So I guess he was trying to make an appointment with to meet the band backstage and have everybody signing the snare drum. And in that, and then Donnie, I guess, had the idea to buy the drum and to use it on the album because they sound different. First of all, Ingo is a little bit there when you use this drum. That was the basic idea. But also, it's nice, the sonore drums of the 80s, they don't sound like they sound today. So it has a very different kind of sound. Yeah, it was a great idea. I remember live when we did this part with Ingo and Donnie, sometimes it's very emotional.
Yeah,
you don't even recognize it when you rehearse and stuff like that. But when you are with the audiences and you as a musician, you know what I'm talking about. You're always surfing on the emotions.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Musicians, what do? We learn our songs. We go on stage and we play. The concert is what comes from the audience. That makes the concert. You kind of bounce off each other, and you know. And we have these situations, and I know that Andy said. We have a German saying like pee-pee in the pee-pee in the Augen. It's like there were situations where you could feel the emotions of the audience and it was jumping over to you. And then you had to fight your tears in these situations, you know. It was a great idea. It was a fantastic idea.
It means the pee-pee in the Augen means piss in your eyes.
Yeah. It's a weird German saying. But no, Ingo was actually a very, very good-hearted person. He was very simple. He was very easygoing. He couldn't think bad of anyone. That was one thing that I really liked. If you would tell him a story about someone you don't like, you're like talking bad about him, he wouldn't even believe it. You know, that was really sweet of him. He couldn't believe bad of anyone. He was like, which is always a good thing. But he was very self-destructive. He was, when I got into the band, he was already like an alcoholic, if you ask me. And he was, especially when we had these problems with noise, you know, when we found out that they were cheating on us and all that stuff, when we had these legal court situations and all that, and we were injuncted for 2 years. In those 2 years, he was aging like 10 years. He had so much time on his hand. I mean, I'm sure you know how it is when you're busy, you got something to do. You know, I can deal with free time very well. I'm never bored. I always have something to do, and I'm good with it. But there are people, if they're not in a structure, if they don't have a job, you know, that tells them where to be at what time, they kind of fall apart. And when we were injuncted, I was shocked when I saw. I was just spending time with my girlfriend by that time, and we didn't see each other when we were injuncted. And I had like a 2 year break when I saw Ingo again. I was shocked what he looked like. You know, he kind of was giving it like every day, and we didn't know that. But he was also taking cocaine like privately. He was hiding that from us. We didn't know about that. But this combination, it was kind of, it destroyed him. You know.
Yeah.
I think he would have gone that way anyway. Because he was on a like you can tell sometimes that some people are on a self-destructive way, you know. There's,
right.
And there was nothing really we could have done, you know. We were kind of helpless, but this situation we've been through just speeded it up.
Gotcha. Last few things. Did you expect, Andy, that this Pumpkins United reunion would be as big as it was? Because it's big arenas in Mexico. It's headlining Wacken. And Helloween always had a certain level of being a big band, but this took it to a different level. Did you expect that would happen?
I didn't.
Well, we all hoped for it, but this is something where you talk amongst each other, like, wow, wouldn't it be great, blah, blah, blah. there's another German saying, man darf ja träumen, you may dream. So you take it as the absolute perfect world thing. In a perfect world, we're reaching this and this and this. That you actually reach everywhere the biggest thing you can, this is certainly unbelievable. I mean, how often have we been standing backstage, Michael and I, looking out into the concert hall, onto the audience, over the stage, and like, again, nearly with pippy in our eyes.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably 9 out of 10 concerts were like that. You could not believe it. I mean, I desperately wanted to soak it in forever, to have it constantly available in my memory, because we didn't take it for granted.
Yeah, it was, to me, I did not know what to expect. I was off the scene way too long to have any idea. But somehow it seems like we've got the two parties together, you know? The Kiske Face Halloween, who jumped off after that, and the Andy family, we got it all together somehow. It worked to bring them all together. And that's, I think that's why.
Yeah. In a perfect world, we always say this or that will happen. But this is just a saying. In a perfect world, it never becomes true. But this time it did. So, yeah, unbelievable.
I'm the most surprised also about the reactions of the album, really. That like I said, we were never number one in England in the single charts, never. You know, that's something that I mean, I'm especially now where you're just waiting, hoping that touring comes back and all that, to have an album released and getting such a great feedback. It's very uplifting. It's very uplifting.
Last question for you. I know they're all songs are like your children, but what's your favorite song on the new record? And what's your favorite song to sing together live from the tour that you just did?
I love like Keeper and the song Halloween, especially when we do that together. I think that's always great fun. Especially Halloween and Keeper, you don't do that much.
It takes away so much pressure if you don't have to sing these long songs alone. And you know, okay, now the other guy is jumping in. That's for singers, it's a dream come true.
Right.
I personally loved everything that we did together, because it was always that fun part in the show. As soon as you have to go out and you know, okay, it's just me now for Soul Survivor or whatever, it's not that party thing. It's becoming serious.
There's one thing coming into my mind. Perfect Gentleman, which is a song that I love, which I think is totally him. I always don't want to come on stage for that one, but he always wants me to come on stage with this, you know, I'm perfect. So he always has to convince me again to go on stage because I think it's his song, you know?
It's a perfect song for you and me to say, no, I am perfect. Because we are gambling then with the last decades where everybody says, oh, Michael is better. Ah, no, Andy is better. No, yeah. Michael is better. Blah, 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 bullshit. No, you're perfect. No, you're perfect. No, you're
perfect.
I like that.
Yeah, it's not bad.
What's your favorite song from the new record?
I really love Skyfall, Out for the Glory. You know, the ones that have a bit of the, I love Fear of the Fallen because strangely that has a bit of a Keeper touch too, which is interesting. I mean, my main phase in this band, you know, where everything was great and we were all happy, it was the Keeper of the Seven Keys records, of course, you know. And that's when that vibe comes up, I'm happy. But I like many songs. I like them all, but I had difficulties with Down in the Dumps in the beginning. It was a song that I understand it now. When we did the listening session it was the first time that I was listening through the whole album. I understood that it makes sense on the record as a comedy kind of aspect. Like you can't really take it completely serious at all.
I should have made a photo. I should have made a photo back in the days of your face where you were the first time listening to the Wacky demo. You had this, what the f- thing in your face.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Down in the Dumps is so crazy.
How about you, Andy? What's your favorite songs on the record?
Okay, just the very Andy thing, because I'm already looking for the live situation. I think I will love to sing The Fear of the Fallen together with Michael. Mm-hmm. This is done for Michael and myself from beginning on. That's why I probably enjoy the big F out of it. And I could imagine that I love to sing together with Michael again. At least the refrains you have to join Mass Pollution.
Yeah, sure.
That'll be probably a live rocker from hell. So yeah, I'm looking forward to them. Certainly Skyfall out of question. What a frigging great song. I mean,
yeah,
he did a fantastic job there. Kai did write definitely. Yeah, that's the follow-up song we needed. And there it is. There are many songs on the album that I could imagine live, but the three of them, I would say, I'm looking forward to. Skyfall mainly because I can have a smoke.
just because I have to ask before we go, tell me quickly, Michael, if you can, what the fuck does Pink Bubbles Go Ape mean? What does that mean?
It was just nonsense because it was basically how we felt. Nothing was working anymore. It was coming out of a conversation that I had with Waiki. Like I said, in that time, it seemed like everything had turned. Like before that, everything was working out. Everything was great. It didn't matter what we touched. You know, it seemed we felt invincible. And then the whole chemistry changed. The whole balance changed, and nothing worked anymore. And I was just joking around. You know, we should call this album like Pink Bubbles Go Wild or something like that. I think that's what I said, because that's what it is, you know. And then, no less, Pink Bubbles Go Ape. That's better. That's how it came. It was on the phone with Waiki. And we did so many things wrong. We took a producer instead of the one we did the key records with. You know, it was just Pink Bubbles Go Ape.
Well, the band is bigger than you've ever been. It's tighter than it's ever been. The new record is awesome. And it's been great talking to you guys. I'm glad we're able to do this. And I'm excited to see you guys at a festival again somewhere down the road when we can start doing that again.
It's going to come back. It's going to come back. And we will appreciate that like never before.
Oh, exactly. Yeah,
because that would mean the craziness had an end.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, thank you, guys. Awesome. I'm glad we got to do this. And it was perfect timing. You just finished your cigar, Andy, so it was the perfect link.
Not yet. Another 10 minutes.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for your support.
Always, forever. Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers, Chris. Bye-bye. Ciao.